right, welcome back to Shattering Myths. We are, since we're getting feedback here on Facebook about it's not funny to poke fun at Texas, and the town is called Waco, not Wacko. In my defense, I was using Wacko as an adjective. The town is Waco, but it is Wacko. So Wacko is simply being used as as an adjective in this case. But Scott, you brought up something that I think is has far-reaching implications, and that is the French version of the banditos. So they'd be les bandits. But the question I have is, would Le Bandit's logo fit on the side of a Vespa?
I don't know, man. I'm picturing a guy. For some reason, I'm picturing a guy with a beret on and a scarf. And he's reaching into his Vespa, pulling out his chain.
If you don't move your Vespa, I will spill my wine on you. I will shove your Vespa aside. No,
To be fair,
Le Bandit.
This story could be happening anywhere, and I would.
No, this is a story that could only happen in Texas. I beg to differ.
True, but if it happened somewhere else, I'd still think this is like the most ridiculous story ever, and I'm amazed by it, and I'm. It is the best action movie ever.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, during this, during the last news, I heard a story that, to me, is even more unbelievable. That was a senator of the United States said that he is running for president. This would be Senator Lindsey Graham. That he's running for president of the United States because of what he sees on television. I'm running for president because of what I see on television. Okay. What is he watching on television?
Is that any more ridiculous than I'm running for president because God told me to?
Okay. You got me there.
I mean, didn't Cruz say that? Isn't that what he said? I'm running for president because God told me to.
Oh. Yeah, I'm still getting over the American Sniper, where one of the ads, the idiot says, I'm prepared to answer to my creator for every time I pulled the trigger. Good luck with that, pal. Yeah, I want you to see how well that works out with the boss. Hey, Kirk, what do you think here? We've lost it, haven't we?
Yeah, pretty much. It's a good show so far. I hate to get serious. Now, Texas is a weird place.
Yeah, you know, Texas has... is an extraordinary religious place, both with its affinity for the Baptists. You've got to be baptized in Texas, and to be a Baptist. And second is you better love football, high school football is right next to Sunday worship service in the Baptist church.
Absolutely.
Well, people do not ask you in Texas, what religion are you? They say, what church do you go to?
Go to. Exactly. They do that all through the South. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's only in Texas that they build $30 million football shrines for high schools.
Amazing. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, $30 million football shrines to high school. You think there's a reason that people are coming out of Texas with their... with the priorities screwed up?
I guess. Huh.
Oh, well, it was the birthplace of the Banditos and the Cossacks, so I guess it's got that going for them.
I called to compliment you on two things. I'm amazed. You said some rather brilliant things the last 2 days.
Uh-oh.
No, I'm serious. I'm serious. Okay. I mean, like this morning, I'll give you this morning when first, which almost got overlooked there. I was just sitting there listening, and then you said you were describing what Yosha said about the people and why he was praising the Ephesians.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, and you paraphrased it, of course, but you said, he's basically delighted that they didn't convert to Christianity.
Yeah.
I've heard hundreds and hundreds of sermons on Revelations in that section, and not one preacher has come up with, he's really delighted they didn't become like the Romans.
Yeah, like the Council of Nicaea. The Council of Nicaea is the birth of the religion of Christianity as it's practiced today. And it was wholly and completely Roman in its nature. So it grew right out of the beast that Yahweh was talking about. But, you know, one of the things that is important here is to note that I did not come to that conclusion quickly or easily. I was, in my first versions of going through it, I was like everybody else. I simply went to the fellow named as Nicholas and tried to make sense of it, but I couldn't because of the fact that almost nothing is known about him, and Yahusha just does not make comments about people that are not known. I mean, he's a big-picture guy.
Yeah.
You know, creator of the universe doesn't have time to tell you about the it's not like you and me. I'm willing to talk about the banditos and the Cossacks. Yahusha's not.
Not that interesting.
No. Way below his pay grade, the banditos and Cossacks. And Nicholas would be way below his pay grade, too. But Christianity's not. He is absolutely focused on the problems of Christianity because it's big picture. Billions of people have been led astray. And so it wasn't until I began to realize that really all of my analysis of the even of Yahusha's statements in the Christian New Testament were prejudiced by my former affinity for the Christian religion. And it took a lot of time and a lot of effort to jettison those things over time and to have my eyes actually open once I had distanced myself from the lies and to say, oh, man. And you know where I came to realize it for the first time is that I wrote about 400 or 500 pages on the beast that is Rome and how the beast that is Rome became the Roman Catholic Church. And it's the Council of Nicaea plays the pivotal role and all of that, from Constantine to Theodosius, and it's all right there. It's all in the Council of Nicaea, and it's named after the Greek god of victory. So it didn't come easily. It didn't come quickly, but it's there nonetheless.
That's probably the first time I heard you kind of allude to it, but I thought today's comment was really profound. I mean, just in a nutshell, that's exactly what he said.
Yeah, that's exactly what he said. He says, I'm glad that you didn't become Christian.
And now, Friday night, I'll compliment you another time. Friday night, you said something I thought was amazing, and Terry and I both sat there and said, did you hear what he said? That's really great. When you were referring to explaining, now we all know the Moloch are a military-like construct. It's a command-control situation.
Right. And we know that because of the term Yahweh used. He used Shabbat describe them.
But there's no question on that, and we know that Ha-Satan was the chief angel. You know, he was a big deal, and he was one of them. So I mean, that is the way he lives. That's the way he is.
Right.
And there's no free will. You have to do exactly what you say, what he's told to do.
Right.
Therefore, it's very
or immediate consequence.
Right, or immediate consequence, or some kind
like there is in the U.S. military. You can disobey an order in the U.S. military, but there's an immediate consequence.
Yeah, shot in prison, whatever.
Yeah, you don't have the right to do so.
No. Now, then you concluded when he said, "I'm going to rise up above and set up my little deal, my kingdom, so to speak." The only thing he can relate to, of course, is the lord-slave relationship.
Yeah. It is.
So why would you think, so when you see the Catholic Church, when you see Christianity, when you see people with Lord, I mean, why doesn't it trigger that, you know, that's a Lord is a master-slave relationship. I mean,
it is, yeah, well, exactly.
What are we thinking? I mean, that's...
What are we thinking, or not thinking?
Or not thinking.
Yeah.
I mean, it's quite profound.
Yeah, but, you know, in both of those two insights, both of them are right there in the text.
I know. Oh, I know.
They're right there in the text. I mean, it's like everything that you've learned when you start studying the letters that comprise the words and you start thinking about them. It's all right there.
I know. Well, like Scott said to me one time, he said, the only time, I said, well, how did it go? And he said, well, that was pretty good. At least you were, that was quite brilliant a couple of times. And I said, what times? And he said, well, when you quoted Yahweh. Yeah, well, that's right. Yeah, that's right. That was very smart that time.
Yeah, because you know that I am extraordinarily reluctant to take credit for anything, and I'm really uncomfortable with praise. And I haven't been fighting you here because of the fact that it should be apparent to our listeners that I didn't do anything here. But finally, shed the smoke screen of religion to the point that I actually could look at the text, and I did enough research to see what he was talking about. And once you see it, it's you say, okay, that was obvious.
Yeah.
And so... But you know, I don't want to de-emphasize this, though. But I say, okay, that was obvious. In both cases, command and control, and there's a reason that Yahweh chose Baal, Lord, to describe the adversary Satan.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only natural conclusion of somebody that wants to be above God and that God refers to as adversarial and as a Lord. And when he uses the term Shabbat to define the Moloch, all you got to do is make the connections there, and the conclusions are obvious. The same thing is true when Yosha speaks of the of Nicolaitan and referencing the people and thought process, the doctrine emanating out of Nicaea.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all you got to do is just shed the nonsense and say, okay, big picture.
Yeah.
What is he talking about? In context, he has been condemning Christianity.
Yeah.
And Pauline doctrine.
Okay, now let me ask you a question. And mm-hmm. and relating to last week's show with when Jason mm-hmm. brought in the part of, you know, where we were talking about the 24th chapter of Matthew.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
And you had quite a discussion about Messiah, Messiah, you know,
yes.
and so forth, and there's
yes.
no definite article, and et cetera,
right.
et cetera. Is there any context when you're talking about Yahusha when this title would have been useful? Because Yahusha, and my question is really, let me put it in this mm-hmm. context, Yahusha yeah. is not mm-hmm. only a name, it's a mission mm-hmm. statement. It tells you
right.
what everything he's about.
Yeah, it's also an identity statement.
An identity statement. So
and a mission statement.
So why do you need to refer to him as Messiah?
Right. Why not just refer to him as Yahusha?
Yeah, I mean, as Yahusha. And then you can't mess it up.
Then you know, as Yahusha, you know from whom he came,
yes.
and you know why he's here.
Right.
So with Yahusha, there is no way to mess it up.
Yeah.
There's a reason that Yahusha is used as a name 220 times in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. And why it's used in the context of the outgrowth and conclusion, the purpose of the covenant and the promised land. For those who may be wondering why we're continuing with Matthew 24 in today's program, that's where we left off on Friday. And the reason is because on the Friday evening program, we spent the entire Friday evening program, all 2 hours of it, focused on Matthew 24, Matthew 24, and particularly in the context as it is derived from 23. And it is for those who went to listen to it, you can go to the blessyahweh.com site, and Richard there on the blessyahweh.com site has all of the programs from the Shabbat show, itemized by topic, and you can listen to it there. But it was interesting, I think, Kirk, to set his comments into context and to realize that he was coming out of a wholesale judgment of, criticism of, expose on, condemnation of, the religious and political establishment, the scribes and the Pharisees, the scribes being liberal political leaders and the Pharisees being orthodox and conservative religious leaders. So he was taking the Republicans and Democrats, if you will, of Israel circa 33 CE and judging both. I mean, this idea that judge not lest you be judged, he was as judgmental as you can be, and pejorative. I mean, he used mean terms. I mean, he called them hypocrites. He called them frauds. He said that they were demonically possessed. They were the children of serpents, demons. So it is interesting for him to show his overt hostility towards political and religious leaders. It undermines Romans 13, where Paul said that every government was established by God and it's good for you. And here is Yosha completely condemning every aspect of the government of Israel. And then from there, it focuses on the differentiation between the institutions of man and the family of God, where he says, you know, I'm going to leave you to your own institutions. And the starkness of that, if you think about it, he's telling political types and religious types, I'm just going to walk away from you. I'm going to leave you lifeless. I'm going to leave you to yourselves. I'm going to have nothing to do with you. Those circumstances, it's pretty darn hard to justify this idea that all religions are a path to God and that political institutions are good.
Or that any.
You know, the only country that he cares about is Israel. And if he's condemning Israel's politicians and government,
mm-hmm.
Oh, my.
Oh, yeah.
So it's and it flows out of that, and it flows out of his comparison of his house, of the temple, of his home on earth, compared with human institutions, and then associates him with the other set apart manifestation of Yahweh, the set apart spirit, and the maternal nature of a mother bird trying to protect her children, and yet him saying, but you were unwilling. And then it was from that contrast, the covenant and the Torah's literal representation here on earth, the covenant's representation here on earth, Yahweh's place here on earth. From that comparison between those things and the institutions of man, he says, you know, that the temple representing Yahweh's home and the special place where we get access to the mercy seat and to the Torah and to the covenant, that's going to be torn down. And, you know, why isn't that you don't see that being torn down? And while he was physically talking about the Roman destruction of the temple in 70 CE, of course, Roman, understand Roman and Roman Catholic, but he was talking about the dismantling of the covenant, of the Torah, of the place that Jerusalem plays and the temple plays, and Yahweh's relationship with his people, that being dismantled. And it was all of that he wanted us to understand. And that is what Pauline Christianity sought to accomplish, did accomplish.
Now, what does Yahweh love more than anything else in the universe?
Oh, well, his word, but his family. Yeah, his word and his family, which is his covenant.
So the context of that is, you know, when you say covenant, most of us may not think of it as strong as that. To me, it's like, this is it. This is everything that's important to him. That's right there.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. And the stones that are being overturned, it's his word. It's the stones that build this pathway to God. It's his words that comprise the very walls of his home. We'll return in a moment. In 2 seconds ago, you were brought up what is something that I have struggled with for some time. And that is that having been a Christian, having been one of the youngest ordained ruling elders really in the history of the Presbyterian Church, I use the term Christ to define myself, Christian.
Mm-hmm.
I use Christ as a last name, as in Jesus Christ. So when I began to write Yada Yada, then Intro to God, I really had a very difficult time trying to understand the basis of that. Now, we know that Christos, the Greek word that's became Christ, means to apply drugs.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, immediately then you go to the Hebrew, and the Hebrew title, depending on how it's written, is either Masayak or Masiyah. It's used 22 times in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms as a name, Masiyah. Masiyah is a compound of Masa, which is the Hebrew word for work, and Yahweh. So it would be the work of Yahweh. And used 22 times as a name. But then I began to study Masiyach, and you know what I found? It was never once written as a name, was never even once written as a title. There is no title HaMasiyach, the Messiah. Not one. And the two times that it's written prophetically, where you'd say, all right, we can use it because it exists in prophecy, there's only two times. And both times it's used as a adjective. Adjectives modify nouns. And as an adjective, it means set apart and prepared, suited for service. So if Shimon Kefesh, who's been corrupted to Peter, if Shimon Kefesh, which means listen to him, said that you are the son of the living God and that you are Masiyach, he would have said that you are set apart from the living God and prepared and suited to serve. And of course, where was Yahusha headed at that very moment?
Passover.
You betcha. To be the Passover lamb. And so if he used the term as it's used in Daniel, he was describing the fact that he was set apart and suited to serve. He was not naming him.
No, that makes perfect sense too, for, get away from the rock stuff. This is perfect sense of why he was so acceptable of what he said.
Yes. Yeah. And he said, based upon this revelation, that he was going to build upon this rock, and sewer is the term in Hebrew. And so again, we have rocks being overturned, rocks which are words. These are words spoken, so he's now defining what a rock is that he's going to use to build. What did Shimon say? Just as a statement by Shimon, so words. Accurately spoken words are the rock that he builds his guidance to us on, his path to us on, to him on. So you've got upon this rock, this sewer, I will build Bana. B-N-H. I will build. And then he said his mikra, ecclesia, which is changed to church in Christian Bibles, has nothing to do with church. Church is a transliteration of the name of the sun goddess of the Teutonic religion, where Helios, the sun, is God. And it is from where we get circle and circus, which is the circles where the shape of the sun, the halos that are in religious context. She was a pagan deity. That's church. Mm-hmm. That was her name, church. He said mikra. And we know that because the only Hebrew word that Yahusha would have spoken that can be translated ecclesia, called out, is mikra. Then the plural mikra. And mikra means to call out.
Right.
To be called out. And just like ecclesia, it means to invite, to summon. And so it's ecclesia is a translation of mikra. And he says, so upon this, I'm going to build B-N-H, my mikra, which are the seven invitations to meet. So if he was set apart and prepared to fulfill and to set apart and suited to do what Yahweh needed done, he just described what he was going to do. He's going to fulfill the mikra. He fulfilled the first four, didn't he?
Yes.
So it's all laid out there, right there for you, when you understand what it means, set apart and suited to serve.
Right.
But why don't you just help our listeners understand when he said build.
Mm-hmm. DNA.
Yeah, B&A.
Yeah.
What was he building?
Well, he's building this family home of people who are upright and want to have this inheritance.
Right.
Or then children of the inheritance, if you like.
Correct.
And the letters spell it out. So
children built, born into the family, who enter the home, who are upright in that home, paying attention. Exactly. It's BF is home and family. Nun is drawn as a and BF is the floor plan of a home with one way in, and BN is a sperm. I mean, the nun is a sperm. It's a child born with an inheritance. Children born into the family, children in the home of God. And not just any child, it's the children of the covenant, because the hey, the ending letter, is the only letter that's repeated twice in Yahweh's name. It's depicted as a person standing up, reaching up, paying attention to God.
Right.
Those are the only people in Yahweh's home. If you're not standing up, you're not in his home. If you're bowed down, you're excluded from his home.
And nothing you said is a stretch.
No.
Absolutely nothing. I mean, you can't say, well, you're twisting this. No, you're not.
No. What I'm doing here is I'm clearing away that which misled and confused me for so long. I'm clearing away all of the smoke and mirrors of Christianity. And I'm getting right to, what did he say? You know, I've said this a bunch of times on this program, and I'm absolutely convinced of it. If you want to understand what Yahusha said, you have to realize he spoke in Hebrew. He was affirming and citing the Torah in Hebrew. And so when you read the Greek, you've got to translate what he said back into the only Hebrew word that could have been used that was later translated into Greek. And so you've got to think in Hebrew.
I just bought two books to do that. I mean, because I have a hard time with that, because I have to use Strong's to go back and figure out what the word was that was translated into Greek, to go back to figure out what it was in Hebrew, to go back and change the letters. So I finally, Terry Belt sent me a couple of books on Hebrew-Greek dictionary and medical, so I can make that transition easy, because I was struggling. I've just about given up on the Greek. I was hoping that we didn't have to go there.
Yeah, well, I really have, too. I've given up on the Greek for lots of reasons.
But this is kind of important, what Yogi
yes.
said. So,
yeah,
so
I would agree.
So I'm trying
agree.
To figure out how to do it quicker without, so I can actually sit here and keep up with you guys, like you and Jason. So,
well, you know, I can't do it. I can't do it quickly.
Well, I can't
it may sound like, oh, we've come up with these insights, and it says, okay, you know, you're rattling these off, but they didn't happen quickly. It happened as a result of 15 years of studying Hebrew.
Sure.
Of gradually, slowly, word by word, stem by stem, mood by mood, conjunction by conjunction, illustration by illustrations, connection by connection, gradually coming to know who Yahweh is, to understand what he's offering us, to see how all of that's conveyed through these letters and words, and then coming to know what the words mean. It was more than a decade of doing that. And then when you do it, then you're, you know, when you're observant, you're able to see, particularly when you consistently try to separate yourself from the fog of religion.
But it's hard when you refer to the stuff that's written out in the witness writings to not know, you know, where you have to go back to the, you have to go from English to the Greek and the Greek back to the.
Oh, I know. Yeah, it's hard.
It's hard.
Yeah, and the problem there is that if you make too big a deal of the Greek, and a lot of people are want to do that, you know, to really analyze the Greek, you can't do that. And that was my tendency, because I really like to get down to the details of what the words mean. But if you do that with the Greek, what you're doing is emphasizing a language that was not used.
No.
I don't care what men chose to use as a translation of what they think Yahweh said.
Mm-hmm.
I care what he said.
Yeah.
He spoke Hebrew.
Right.
He didn't speak Greek. And so you've got to cleanse your palate of the Greek thought process, because Greek is a philosophical language.
Exactly.
It's a language that was designed specifically to convey the philosophy of the Greeks, which was to essentially say that there were two realities, a perfect reality that was of the spirit and was part of their pagan religion, and a inferior version of it, a shadow of it that was of the flesh. And Pauline doctrine is written this way.
Right.
And so it's just a corrupt tool. And so if you really analyze the Greek, I think you're going in the wrong direction.
You can't embrace it. No, and that's
right.
What preachers do.
Right. So what you need to do is to say, all right, here's the Greek translation. What is the word that it was used to translate in Hebrew, and what does the Hebrew word mean? And with Yosha, it's not all that difficult to do, because Yosha quoted the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms in Hebrew, which has been now translated into Greek hundreds upon hundreds of times. So every time that he translates, and he's not translating, every time that he presents the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms in Hebrew, and it's translated into Greek, what do you have to do?
You have to go back to the Hebrew.
Right. And so since we have the Hebrew, it's very easy to know what each of the words that he is now translated to have been translated in Greek. You can take them back to Hebrew just by looking at the passages he quoted. So if you want to hone your skill to understand what he said in Hebrew, that's what I would start. What I would do is if I were you, and I think this is a worthwhile thing to do, I'd make a lexicon of Greek terms for their Hebrew equivalent by beginning by referencing those things that the times that he's actually quoting the Hebrew Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, because there you know for certain what he actually said, and you know how the Greek was used to translate what he said. So you can reverse engineer it based upon that.
It just takes a little while.
Oh, it's going to take a little while, but the rewards for doing that will be extraordinary. Because his comments on the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms and the covenant are brilliant. We'll be back. Well, understanding that Yosha is set apart and prepared to serve in the building of his family through the invitations to be called out and meet the seven mikre and fulfilling immediately thereafter the first four. All of that makes great sense. That was the stone upon which Yosha was going to build his family through the fulfillment of the Moed Mikre. In fact, the first four Mikre provide the first all five benefits of the covenant. So there's a direct tie there. But Kirk, it's impossible, really, that Yosha meaningfully fulfilled a prophecy about becoming the Messiah when there's no reference to the Messiah anywhere in the prophets.
No. That's what I mean. The revelation to me, the gestalt or whatever to me, mm-hmm. was that Messiah is just ill-placed. They had to destroy, you know, they don't come in Jesus' name. They come in Christ's name. They always use, even in this, in the English passages, it's always, they will come, right. You know, as Christ, because you can misinterpret Messiah with a translation of Christ. You can change it all, but you can't change Yosha.
No.
Yosha is, it's just right in your face.
Yeah, the Nicodean Nicaea victory over Hebrew and the Torah is Christ.
Christo, yeah.
Christos. And the fact that he now has a name. He has an identity. He's the Christos.
Yes.
He's the one who drugs, the one who intoxicates.
Well, that's what I got.
Yeah.
That's what I got out of it all. And that it made perfect sense to me. You don't want to run around calling himself Jesus.
Yeah, and that's why he said
he wants to be a Christo.
Yeah, that's why he said in Montaigne 24 that many will say that I am the Christos.
Right.
I am the Christ. And you know that many say that. He's not. He's not.
Said he was the Messiah, right?
Yeah.
The work.
Yeah, he's not.
His work. Has to finish his work. The whole church has to finish his work.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. If you don't know his name, you don't know who he is.
Yeah.
Plain. If you don't know his name, you don't know who Yahweh is. If you don't know his name, you most certainly aren't engaged in a relationship with him. If you don't know his name, you aren't saved. And, you know, I know a lot of people that have a conniption fit. Okay, you think that all of this is based on a name, but God has many names, and he knows who I'm talking about. No, he has one name.
He has one name, and it tells his story.
You're right. And if you don't know his name, you do not know him.
Yeah, because you don't know his story.
Right.
Yeah.
He was really clear about his name, and he has only one name that he wants to be known by, Yahweh. Not two names, not Yahweh and Yahusha.
No.
And so that means that Yahusha is a designation of Yahweh's renown. It's a designation of Yahweh's purpose. It's a designation of Yahusha's mission. It has nothing to do with a name. It's a mission statement. It's an identity designation.
Let me go one step further. You started this out with him talking about destroying the temple.
Mm-hmm.
No stone unturned. Inside the temple, of course, is the Ark of the Covenant.
Yep.
When you look up the word Ark of the Covenant, Ark,
uh-huh.
The word, I know you know this, but it's Aleph, Rosh, Wad, Nun.
Mm-hmm.
Is the Ark of the Covenant, and it's the authority with the power and ability to do the work to gather the observant people to enlarge the family with inheritance.
Yeah.
And the word is A-R-W-N, Aaron, enlightened
right.
free will.
Enlightened free will.
And that's what the Ark is. I mean,
right.
That's why we know it's still there. He's not going to let somebody destroy that message. It's still there.
Yeah, and it's based upon the Hebrew word for light and the Hebrew word for oath and the Hebrew word for infinity, for all time. It's the enlightened testimony of Yahweh, the testimony that enlightens, that is not only eternal, but is the very vow or promise of the creator of the universe.
I mean, everywhere you turn, every
right.
reference he gives you.
So you tell me, Kirk, what's more insightful? Aaron, which is enlightened free will,
mm-hmm.
the eternal promise of Yahweh to empower us, to transform us into light based upon us making an enlightened choice,
mm-hmm.
or Ark.
Ark means nothing.
Means nothing.
Means nothing. Even the root. Even the root.
Yeah, it means absolutely nothing. And the other is extraordinarily profound. So if you're just trying to communicate in English, are you going to know what God said? Or do you have to think in Hebrew? Do you have to peel back the layers in Hebrew? Is there a reason, my friend, that in his longest public statement, Yahusha began it by saying not a single yod or a tittle, not a single letter or stroke of a letter, the Torah will ever be annulled?
Mm-hmm.